History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they really don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to take a little initiative and invest a little bit of time. If we just ask a few questions and listen intently, it's amazing just how much we can learn. Our goal is first and foremost to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And what we find in that process is that not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This is one of those rare situations in which we're continuing a conversation that began on our last episode. If you missed it, you can access that or more than 800 other episodes online at hometownheroesradio.com. What a fascinating journey Herb Ford has been on for the last 96 years, and he's not slowing down all that much. We're going to get a taste of what keeps him busy and keeps him youthful as we continue that conversation today. Herb was an only child raised by a single mother in Harlingen, Texas. He joined the Merchant Marine during World War II and headed to the Pacific aboard a fuel tanker, the SS Fort George. He's one of the last people alive who was actually there in Tokyo Bay. He was aboard the Fort George when Japan's unconditional surrender was signed aboard the battleship USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945. We heard about his time in the Army Air Corps and the years he spent at the Pentagon when it was in its infancy. He was recalled for Air Force service during the Korean War, which is when he met his wife, Anita. They enjoyed 64 and a half years of marriage before her passing 3.5 years ago. The Fords were fixtures at Pacific Union College in Angwin, California, where he retired as vice president, but his work with the college isn't over, thanks to the Pitcairn Island Study Center, which we'll learn more about today. We're also going to hear about his prolific writing and some of the books he's authored, and we're going to pick up where we left off last time. Herb shared that when he was handling public relations for the Seventh-day Adventist faith, he lined up public appearances for Medal of Honor recipient Desmond Doss, the conscientious objector turned heroic medic upon whom the movie Hacksaw Ridge was based. And Mr. Ford told us that decades ago, he was asked to write a book about Desmond Doss and his story.
Did you ever regret not writing that book?
No. I just write what I can and leave it to somebody else to do the other things.
And how many books have you written?
Well, I've written a dozen of them. Four of them have been about Pitcairn Island, different aspects of it. And the others have been stories of missionaries overseas and story of the underground leader, John Widener. Just books that have kind of been forced on me via my public relations work.
So I think if I'm reading between your words there, what I hear you saying is you never were seeking to be a prolific author. There were just opportunities and you felt that that was a calling you had to step into?
I think interest has made me an author. In other words, when I first heard the story of my book, Flee the Captor, I got a call from the head of the American Jewish Congress in Los Angeles, Haskell Azir, his name was, and he said, "We're going to honor a member of your religious faith." He said, "You may want to come bring your president of your conference to this because we're going to pay special tribute to this man while we pay tribute to other people also. But your man has done so much more for the Jewish people than these others that we're going to pay special tribute." And he said, "Leo J. Cobb, I think it is, the actor, is going to do the tribute, and you may want to come." So anyhow, we went there, and that opened up that story to my mind, and I just became so interested. And I went home, told my wife about it, and she said, "You got to write a book about him." I had only written one small little book, just a booklet, more or less, about the mission work of our church. among the Navajo Indians in Arizona. Anyhow, it kept on coming to me, you got to do it, you got to do it, from me and from my wife and others. And so we made arrangements to be with John in taping sessions over a period of 4 or 5 months, and then reducing the tapes to chapters. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great book editor at a place called the Southern Publishing Association in Nashville, Tennessee. That's an Adventist publishing house. So that first big book experience was a good one that caused me to have an interest in thinking of others. Then another missionary who had had a terrific experience in educational innovation at a Adventist school on the Yangtze River in China was another one. Choral organization from a Adventist college in Japan was the basis for another one. That one from Japan, this choral organization, had made quite a reputation for itself in Japan. Mm-hmm. And they were coming to the United States and were going to tour the States and then end their time in the United States at a general conference session of the church, which is the top world session of the church. So I was assigned to do publicity for them as they came until they left the territory that I was working in. I had quite a time arranging for one of the boats in Pearl Harbor to take this group out to the Arizona Memorial because they wanted to lay a wreath under the names there in the Arizona Memorial. And a young man from Nagasaki and a young lady from Hiroshima were going to lay this wreath there. And I had to work with the lady for a long time to try to get a boat, and the time that I needed to have the boat was coming up. And I told the lady, she was a petty officer of some kind in the Navy, I said, you know, we're not making too much progress. Is there anyone I could talk to about this matter that perhaps you work with? And so she gave me the name of a fellow, and I talked with him. He said, what do you want, Ford? I said, I want a boat. Takes this group out there and stays there while they sing a couple of songs and lay this wreath there. He said, you got it. I said, you know, I want a boat. He said, I said, you got it. So anyhow, we went out and we had a lot of media people with us out there. And I'm standing back here, and here's a television cameraman here is taking pictures as this group was, I think it was singing. Every few moments, this cameraman would shake his head. And as he did that, a little silver something would go sparkling off into the air because the sun was coming in on this. And finally I realized those were tears. That guy was crying as he was filming. And that affected me quite a bit.
You've been a part of capturing special moments and telling powerful stories. And I do want this audience in particular to hear about your book, Flee the Captor, because that's probably right up their alley. It's a book they might want to pick up. How long ago did you write that?
Oh, in the days of antiquity. 1966 was when I wrote it. And it has been republished, new editions of it, right along in English, and then in five other languages, Dutch and German and French and Czech from Czechoslovakia, and Spanish. And it's a wonderful story. John Widener was in a good position to do what he did to transport Jewish people out of France into Switzerland, which was neutral during the war. But He had many an escape from being captured, and was captured and escaped from that. And had 250 people in his underground organization. And that, of course, was a big problem, because any one of them, and one of them did, speak wrongly at the wrong time, and the Germans found out about it. And his own sister lost her life because of his service. It's quite a book.
So Flee the Captor, and I'll put a link to that at hometownheroesradio.com. Do you have, I know you're a humble man, I'm not asking you to brag, but do you have an idea of how many copies that book has sold?
Well, in terms of the huge book publishing that goes on, this is small peanuts, but the first printing went through 27,000, I think, and then there have been four printings since then, and I've not kept track of any count. Some of them have been small paperbacks, some of them big paperback, and the overseas copies, I have no idea what that is. I could imagine if it hit 100,000, I'd be surprised.
That's still a lot in the book publishing world, and you know, we've seen Schindler's List on the big screen. Corey Ten Boom, The Hiding Place is one that's very popular. You think maybe someday we'll see Flee the Captor as a Hollywood production?
Not related to me. There was a foundation created for John Widener, the hero of this book, and the people who run that foundation may try to have the story done on film. I'm not sure, but it was a great, great thing. And of course, you mentioned in Corey Ten Boom, I just never forget about her talking about sins and confessed sins, and how she talked about they're taken to the deepest place in the ocean and dropped there, and then a sign is placed there: no fishing here. That's a very powerful example of the forgiveness of sin, I think.
So you work for the church doing public relations, then you end up at Pacific Union College. You're teaching in the journalism and public relations department. You end up in administration. But somewhere along the line, this lifelong fascination with Pitcairn Island becomes more than just a hobby. How did that unfold?
Well, that's true. Of course, through the years at different times, there were contacts about and with Pitcairn Island. Some of the Pitcairners would come to the United States, and it seems like almost every time anyone would come, I would somehow be able to get to meet and talk with them. But I was at Pacific Union College, and I was reading a lot of newspapers and magazines that were telling stories about the mutiny on the Bounty and Pitcairn Island's connection with it. And they were pure Cloud 29 stuff. They would talk about wide, white, sandy beaches of Pitcairn Island, and the natives lolling on the sand under the shade of the coconut trees. And Pitcairn has none of that. Pitcairn is a volcanic outcropping from the floor of the Pacific Ocean, way down in the south, about 4,500 miles straight south of San Francisco. Straight south of San Francisco is water, because the landmass runs off to the southeast, as you may know. And that's the South Pacific Ocean down there. And anyhow, we were seeing these stories and kind of gnashing my teeth about how they were incorrect. And I began to think, shouldn't there be some place where accurate information about the Bounty and about Pitcairn Island could be stored or made and offer the information to people who wanted to tell the true story of this incident and this island. And so I began with a collection that I already had about Pitcairn and a bit of a collection that the college, Pacific Union College, had about Pitcairn. And then I had found a little classified ad in the Saturday Review of Literature about a man saying he wanted to donate his collection of Pitcairniana to a public library. And so I wrote to this man, and he wrote back and said, I see no reason why I shouldn't send my collection to you. So with those three collections, we started the Pitcairn Island Studies Center. And since that time, we have tried to add to it as much as we can. Until today, we'd have to say, in all honesty, that this Pitcairn Island Study Center at Pacific Union College in Northern California has the world's largest collection at one site of material about Mutiny on the Bounty and Pitcairn Island. And we have people coming from all over the world to study there, and people using our website to ask questions about and get information about. And we have had numerous authors write to us before their publications about the island and the mutiny and ask for authentic information. And so it's been a success in that regard. And we're happy to still have a part in it by, I work the internet and do probably 3/4 of the work of it. And the staff of the library at the college handles the on-site visits and all of the things like that.
So you're 96 years old.
Well, I'll be 97 next August.
So 5 days a week. You drive here to the office?
I have a terrific little Kona car that is all electric, and all the electricity in it comes from the solar panels on my garage. So I'm into the modern day way of living.
It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come with Herb Ford of Exeter, California. We'll hear more about Pitcairn Island and the study center that he continues to run remotely, and we'll get some highlights from his recent honor flight to Washington, D.C. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.